Welcome, and thank you for standing by. Your lines have been placed in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. This call is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the call over to your speaker for today, Mr. Dave Daigle. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Calvin, and thank you all for joining us today for this telebriefing, both on the release of the 2012 National Immunization Survey detailed in today's MMWR, as well as the increases we are seeing in measles around the country. Joining us today is Dr. Ann Schuchat, that is spelled S-C-H-U-C-H-A-T. She is the director of CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. She is going to provide a few opening remarks, and then we'll go to your questions. During the question period, we're going to be joined by Dr. Jane Zucker, who is the Assistant Commissioner in the Bureau of Immunization at the New York City Department of Health, Dr. Zach Moore, medical epidemiologist from the North Carolina Department of Health, and Dr. Saroj Rai, the Immunization Branch Manager from the Texas Department of State Health Services. So with that, we'll begin with Dr. Schuchat's comments, and then we'll take your questions. Dr. Schuchat?
Thanks so much, Dave, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today. What I'd like to do is share good news about our nation's childhood immunization coverage and highlight the role that the Vaccines for Children program played in helping us reach and sustain high coverage levels. We've come a long way in the 20 years since that program was first established. There's still work to do, though, and so today I'll also discuss measles across the United States, summarizing the cases and outbreaks that we've had so far this year. The origins of the Vaccines for Children program and analysis of today's high vaccine coverage and local hotspots tell a story of striking contrasts. 20 years ago, the VFC program was developed to fix a national crisis of missed opportunities. Today, we have a strong public-private partnership for immunizing children that reflects the success of the VFC program. But today, we also have local measles outbreaks representing a very different dynamic. Instead of our system missing opportunities to vaccinate young children, in some communities, people have been rejecting opportunities to be vaccinated. Let me start with our National Immunization Report Card, the National Immunization Survey of Toddlers Aged 19 to 35 Months, or the NIS. According to the 2012 NIS, the vast majority of parents are vaccinating their children against potentially serious diseases. A brief word about the survey. It's a random digit dialed survey. It is provider verifications. We mail information to providers to double check the information that the parents tell us over the phone. And this report that we're releasing today describes national, state, and selected local area coverage for immunizations in children who were born between January 2009 and May 2011. Their immunizations received are part of what we're reporting. The survey results refer to almost 17,000 children who had provider-verified vaccination records. About half of the subjects we gathered from cell phone samples and about half from landline samples. And this year's survey has a much larger cell phone sample, so we think it's a much more representative sample than what we've had in the past. The 2012 NIS report shows that most children are complete on the recommended vaccinations. The U.S. continues to have high rates of immunization coverage at the national level. Vaccination coverage remained near or above 90% for measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, or MMR, for the polio series, for hepatitis B series, and for varicella or chickenpox vaccine. The percentage of children who receive no vaccinations remains low. Only 0.8%, or less than 1%, of children in this survey had received no vaccines at all. These are really good results, but there is opportunity for improvement. Vaccination coverage varied by state, both for individual vaccines and for the series measure. Now, for that series measure, I want to give a special shout-out to Hawaii that had the highest series coverage at 80.2%. When we look across the states, we also saw that 15 states had MMR coverage below 90%. That's a warning sign that outbreaks may occur or that the state as a whole may be becoming vulnerable. We also need to do a better job with vaccine doses that are needed in the second year of life. The booster doses of diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, Hib, and pneumococcal conjugate vaccine were all lower than we would like to see. So getting vaccines in that second year of life continues to be important for us to focus on. So economic disparities in immunization are much narrower than what we used to see. We do see lower coverage in children living in poverty for the vaccines that require a dose in the second year of life, and for some of the vaccines that were more recently recommended. So this year's report card is very good, and the high coverage we see explains why most vaccine-preventable diseases are at record low levels. Now, it's always nice to share good news about immunization rates among our infants and toddlers around the country, but for me, it's especially rewarding to do so this year as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of passage of the legislation that created the Vaccines for Children program, or VFC. VFC provides vaccines to children whose parents or guardians may not be able to afford them, and it helps protect millions of children from life-threatening vaccine-preventable diseases. It was created in response to a terrible resurgence of measles that our country experienced during 1989 to 1991. During those three years, about 55,000 cases of measles were reported in the United States, and 123 people died from measles. Hardest hit were unvaccinated preschool-aged children, many from low-income inner-city families. Many investigations were done to understand the measles resurgence, and one key finding was that children were in the doctor's offices, but they were not being vaccinated because they didn't have insurance and their doctors were referring them to the health department clinics to get their shots. As a country, as a healthcare system, we were missing opportunities to vaccinate these children in their medical home. We don't even know how low immunization coverage was at the time that the national measles crisis started. The survey that we had used to track immunization had actually been canceled after 1985 due to budget cuts. But although kids were getting caught up with measles vaccinations at kindergarten before they entered school, we realized that many toddlers and preschool-aged children had not gotten vaccinated on time, and measles virus finds unimmunized people. So this national crisis of measles was because we were missing preschool-aged children with vaccines. In 1993, the VFC program legislation passed, and part of the program was the requirement that we monitor immunization coverage annually. The National Immunization Survey was born, and the results we're reporting today are also a result of the VFC legislation. I want to mention that we have a VFC digital press kit available, and online you can see a coverage graph that looks at the really low coverage that we had in the 80s, a gap in coverage when we stopped doing surveys, and then what has happened since. So next, I want to briefly discuss the national measles situation so far this year. It's a far cry from that crisis that we had 24 years ago, but with measles, things can change very quickly, and we need to stay ahead of this virus, which means we need to make sure that immunization coverage is high everywhere. This year, the U.S. is experiencing a higher-than-usual number of measles cases. There have been three outbreaks that account for most of this year's cases in New York City, North Carolina, and Texas. From January 1st to August 24th, 159 measles cases have been reported across the United States. That's the second largest number of measles cases we've had in this country since measles was eliminated in 2000. During this period, 16 states reported measles cases, and the age of cases ranged widely from birth to 61 years. 37% of the cases were in children under 5, and 18 or 11% of all cases were in babies under 12 months who are too young to be routinely vaccinated. 17 or 11% of the cases required hospitalization. 4 of the patients had pneumonia. Fortunately, none of the measles cases here in the U.S. this year died. Most of this year's cases were unvaccinated, 131 or 82%, or had unknown vaccination status, 15 cases or 9%. Among the 140 U.S. residents, 117 were unvaccinated. And I want to tell you in particular about why they were unvaccinated, because it's so different than what we were seeing back in 1989 to 91. 79% of the U.S. resident cases that were unvaccinated had philosophical objections to the vaccine. A smaller number, 15 cases or 13%, were babies under 12 months who can't directly be vaccinated but rely on those around them being vaccinated. Let me say a few words about the outbreaks. New York City reported 58 cases, making this the largest outbreak reported in the United States since 1996. None of the patients in that outbreak had documentation of measles vaccination. North Carolina reported the second largest outbreak so far with 23 cases. Cases mainly occurred among people who were unvaccinated due to philosophical objections. And in the current outbreak in Texas, 21 cases, more since we made the report in the MMWR, have been reported. The numbers may continue to change as this outbreak may be ongoing. 17 of those cases in Texas were unvaccinated. As these outbreaks are showing, clusters of people with like-minded beliefs leading them to forego vaccines can be susceptible to outbreaks when measles virus is imported from elsewhere. Measles, as you know, is highly contagious and can lead to serious complications and even death. We need very high rates of immunization to protect the most vulnerable, children who are too young to be vaccinated, and those who can't be vaccinated due to their health conditions. Importation of measles into the U.S. continues to occur, and it poses a threat to our country. It poses a particular threat to people who are not vaccinated. All of the measles cases reported in the U.S. in 2013 were associated with importations from other countries. There were 42 actual importations from 18 other countries. You can think of an import-associated case as being linked back to a traveler who brought the disease into the U.S. from another country. Half of the imported measles cases we had in the U.S. originated from Europe, not a place that many people think of when they try to update their vaccine records before travel. Measles is still common in many parts of the world, and unfortunately, about 160,000 people around the world die from the disease each year. Rapid public health response to measles is critical, given how very infectious measles is and the fact that we do still have pockets of unvaccinated people. We have to rapidly investigate and respond to measles cases. But thanks to the high vaccination rates and rapid public health response, the outbreaks in 2013 have been contained, and that is at the cost of tremendous effort on the part of public health workers who respond to these outbreaks when they occur. Frontline public health workers around the country investigate every single case of measles to keep this virus from retaking hold in our communities. These days, many parents and even pediatricians don't remember a time when diseases like measles were common. They may never have seen the devastating effects that vaccine-preventable diseases can have on a family or community. But please remember, these diseases are still out there. They're literally a plane ride away. And every day, about 11,000 babies are born in the United States, completely vulnerable to all of these diseases. Today's great report card is the result of very hard work by parents, by pediatric caregivers, by public health workers, to make sure that children are getting their recommended immunizations at the recommended times. It's also, today's Good Report Card is also very much the result of efforts by policymakers who 20 years ago passed legislation to assure that every child in America, regardless of insurance status, had access to life-saving vaccines. So we'd be happy to take questions now.
Thank you, Dr. Shuchat. And Calvin, we're ready for the first question.
Thank you. Our first question comes from Mike Stobey with Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I just wanted to, Doctor, you said 159 through August 24th. Is there a more updated figure, and could you comment on, you know, what you think the numbers will be for the whole year, given the current pace? I had a second question, too, about why we seem to be high this year, but there were only 55 last year, you know, the year of the London Olympics.
Right. I don't. I think the 159 is the best number to use through August 24th. We update those numbers every week in the MMWR. But a key thing to say is that you can go from the average of 60 cases that we have every year to a very high number very quickly. In France a couple years ago, they had a large outbreak. After years where they had 40 to 50 cases a year, their outbreak eventually reached 20,000 cases. So we can see wide spread of this disease if there are enough unvaccinated people and if we don't respond quickly enough to importation. So the large number this year is because when we've had imported cases, some of the communities it's reached have had larger numbers of unimmunized people. So relatively large numbers with the 159 cases so far this year or the 222 that we had a couple years ago. The frontline public health workers jump on these cases and contact people and make sure that we vaccinate around the cases if they're unimmunized people. But if we have travelers coming back to a community with lots of unimmunized, we can have a very big outbreak. And if we don't stop the spread, we can have several generations of transmission. You had a follow-up question?
Why do you think, you may have partly answered this, but why didn't we have more last year, the year of an international Olympics, when we had presumably a lot of people going to Europe and coming back?
Well, we have lots of international events every year. I can say that we did quite a bit of alert around the Olympics in London with many messages to travelers to remind them that measles was circulating in that country. But we have sporting events every year. We have large population gatherings. And so we know that every day people are traveling to the United States from countries that have measles circulating. We're really dependent on high immunization coverage everywhere. So I think that is a critical factor with measles. The virus is potentially coming in every day to every community. If you and your kids aren't vaccinated, it could spread in your own backyard.
Thanks, Mike. Next question, please, Calvin.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Jonathan Sturry with Fox News. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hi, Dr. Shuchat. You had mentioned that people who don't get vaccinated for philosophical reasons or reasons tend to cluster together. Could you describe what the typical cluster would be? Would it be a group of multi-generational families living together? Would it be at the neighborhood level? Would it be at the regional level?
Thanks for that question. We've seen many patterns. We've seen extended families and gatherings like weddings where many cousins will gather. We've seen religious organizations. We've seen schools. You may recall 2008, where we were shocked at the high numbers of unimmunized kids in some schools in San Diego. So it can be a number of circumstances. In the modern era, it may not be the geographic neighborhood, but more the social neighborhood that you circulate in. But a thing to remember about measles is you don't have to be closely connected to somebody to get measles from them. You can bring measles virus into an arena, and anybody who's not vaccinated in that arena who's never had measles is going to get that virus. It's very, very transmissible and can infect virtually everybody who is susceptible, who's in the vicinity. We know that during the measles resurgence in 1989 to 91, there was a problem in doctors' offices because the measles virus can hang out in the air. If you are in the same waiting room as someone with measles, you'll get measles if you've never had it. But if you come into that waiting room within 4 hours of a person who's infectious with measles, you can also get the virus because it can be there after the person has left. So this is an extraordinarily contagious virus. And the strong, the incredibly low numbers of measles that we have relative to the pre-vaccine era are a testament to that extremely strong system we have and high coverage in most areas.
Thank you, Jonathan. And next question, please, Calvin.
Our next question comes from Erica Edwards with NBC News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if you could repeat the number of reported cases from this year's measles outbreak in Texas. I believe you said it was updated since the MMWR numbers came out.
Yes, I believe there are 21 so far, and I'm not sure if Texas Saroj would like to. Is
yeah.
Saroj, would you like?
Dr. Saroj Rai, would you like to jump in?
Yes, actually, the number, that is correct. It's 21.
Thank you. Thank you, Erica. Calvin, next question, please.
Our next question comes from Neil Osterwald with Medscape Medical News. Your line is open.
Hi. This is a question about what the physician in practice can do to help convince patients about getting vaccines. Is there any research into what works, scare tactics, coaxing, cajoling? How do you get patients who are vaccine shunners, vaccine refuseniks, to take up vaccination?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that actually all parents want to keep their children healthy and safe. And we know that virtually all parents, more than 99% of today's toddlers have received at least some vaccines. We know that the conversation that a physician or nurse has with a family is very important, and provider or clinician recommendation is the strongest influence on what a parent decides to do. It's these days, many clinicians haven't seen measles, they haven't seen meningitis, they haven't seen the kinds of pneumonia that we can prevent with vaccines, and it's very important for us to keep alive and remember what these diseases can do. But a clinician's strong recommendation is very important. It's also important for clinicians to listen and to make sure they understand what concerns and questions parents have and that they address them and take them seriously, because bottom line is that parents want to keep their children healthy and they want good information in order to do that. Unfortunately, several years ago, there was a lot of bad information circulating about the measles-containing vaccine, and we think that that is very much a minority of the problem right now, but we know that pediatricians and clinicians can have a very strong influence on their patients, reminding them that we're saving about 42,000 lives every year in the United States by vaccinating babies against vaccine-preventable diseases.
Thank you, Neil. And next question, please, Calvin.
Our next question comes from Michelle Adame with Disability Scoop. Your line is open.
I'm actually wondering if you can comment at all about the other report in the MMWR today about children with neurologic and neurodevelopmental conditions and rates of flu vaccines.
Yeah, let me just briefly say that that among the vaccine-preventable diseases is influenza, and among the most vulnerable for influenza-related complications are children with neurologic disabilities. Today's MMWR reports on a survey of parents and providers about vaccinating kids who have those disabilities, and we found that we have room for improvement. It's very important that we vaccinate these children and that we vaccinate people around them to protect them. So another area where we have room for improvement and just reminding us how vulnerable children around this country need to be vaccinated but also need those around them to be vaccinated.
Were you alarmed by the numbers that were found in this survey?
I think that we have lots of room for improvement with influenza vaccination. Certainly during the 2009 H1N1 pandemic, we saw such horrible, we really had record numbers of deaths in children, and we know that the neurologic conditions contributed disproportionately to those deaths. So I hope that we can do better in the future.
Thank you, Michelle. Next question, please, Calvin.
One moment for our next question. I'm showing no further questions. Once again, please press star 1 if you would like to ask the question.
And, Calvin, we have time for one more question if there's somebody on the line. If not, Calvin, we want to thank everybody for joining us.
Do you have one? Yes. We have David Sell with the Philadelphia Inquirer. Your line is open.
Hello, thank you for taking the call. I'm sorry for the late button pushing. Anyway, one question. Would you like to see pharmaceutical companies do something differently in how they talk to the public to help the cause for greater vaccination?
Thanks for that question. You know, I think there's a challenge when the pharmaceutical company does the messaging around vaccines. There may be questions that the public has about their independence and why they're speaking. We know that we wouldn't have these vaccines if manufacturers didn't produce them and do quality control and, you know, really do the science and research that gets us these vaccines. But we also know that the public and parents in general want independent messaging about vaccinations. So I think it's very important that we recognize immunization is a huge partnership of the private sector, the industry that creates these vaccines, the researchers that study them, the private clinicians, docs and nurses who give them out, pharmacists and so forth who give them out, as well as the public themselves, parents who are learning what they need to about these products and how to protect their children and taking their kids for all those appointments to get their vaccines, as well as, of course, the public health sector, which is doing so much to make sure that we have a smooth running system and that terrible diseases like measles don't retake hold here in the U.S.
Thank you, David. And this concludes our press briefing for today. Thank you, Calvin, for your help. Take care.